We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt in Eastern Pennsylvania. Joining me all the way over there. Right back where he started from, Mr. Dan Rubenstein in sunny Southern California. Sir, how are you?
If I'm in sunny Southern California, which I presume to be true, I presume because I'm right now inside of a walk-in closet with what looks to be a lot of my mom's workout gear.
Don't give it away. Don't give away the secret sauce here on how we make this thing.
I listen, our veneer is so thin that I can't help but tell people. And people ask sometimes, like, man, your show sounds pretty good. How does that work? I was like, well, it's you just have to embarrass yourself. you just have to go all out and say, I want the show to sound pretty good. I'm going to put my little interface inside of a dresser drawer. I'm going to stand. I've got a sloping ceiling about 6 inches from my head that I'm about to hit at any moment. It's just putting in slightly more effort. That's all it is.
It really is. And also, I did want to point out, even though we drew reference to it on the last show, we needed to mention you were in California, not so anyone would rush to judgment or make assumptions that you were part of the Harvard-Yale student protest over climate change, which delayed the game for like 48 minutes or something like that. That was so crazy.
Yeah. Well, I never hate people really going for it with a peaceful protest, whatever you believe.
No,
people that just go for it. Commit to the bit.
They absolutely committed to the climate change bit. Hello, welcome back to the show. Week 13 now in the books. We have much to discuss. Don't forget, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. We are out there on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addicts. Keep sending me different apps so I have more to list here. Overcast. Anywhere you get your shows, subscribe to The Solid Verbal. We're also out there on social media. Just look us up. You'll find us. Also going out to the subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com, as well as our website, solidverbal.com. It's where you can find all of our old stuff. And if you want, reach out and fill out the contact form. Let us know what's on your mind. So look, we've got much to discuss here, not the least of which is what happened with your Oregon Ducks.
Sure.
Which I don't want to rub any salt in that wound. We'll get to it momentarily.
No, it's fine. Salt away. As long as it's, you know, a good salt. None of this iodized garbage.
Straight no chaser.
Yeah, I want some sea salt. I want some crystal. I want some Malden's flaky tie.
A lot of times when we record the Sunday recap show, we do it 9, 9:30, 10 o'clock Eastern time in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you're out on the West Coast, we didn't want to put you through that, so we're recording at high noon here, Eastern time.
So same time for me. Yeah.
Same time for you, different time for me.
Yeah.
This also means that the show is going to be posted a little bit later. So if you're listening and wondering, why was the verbal late? This is why the verbal was late. Also, we have the reverbs now. A lot of times we don't have the reverbs. They're still in the process of being produced as we're recording. Being so, it's a little bit of a later recording time.
Right.
We have the reverbs that we can play. So why don't we just jump in? Let's hear it from you, your week 13 reverbs. Have a listen.
Hey, guys. It's Josh from Washington, D.C. Just wanted to send a friendly reminder out there that you play to win the game. Forks up. Go Devils.
Hi, this is Brian from Boston.
Hi, this is Quinlan from Texas.
Hi, this is Jason from the ASU student section.
What's up, Dan and Ty? This is Tyler from Alabama.
Dan, Ty, Jimmy from Chicago.
This is Patrick from Tybee Island.
This is Michael from Waco, Texas, where my Bears just clinched the Big 12 championship. Denzel Mims, certified dude.
Honey, I told you not to touch Tom Herman's feet because you were going to burn yourself.
Hey, Texas is back. To mediocrity, sick and Bears.
Imagine going through a coaching search and hiring Tom Herman instead of Matt Rhule.
I just have to ask, when does the Mensa kick in for Texas?
I'd like to make an announcement to thank Maryland for providing the ultimate neck crack experience for Nebraska. Our sputter for six ends next week against Iowa. Iowa has bad corn. Go Big Red.
I think that it's official that Maryland is not back. Drive for six, still in play. Go Huskers.
Congrats to the Buckeyes, but I'm super proud of the Penn State Nittany Lions today. They really showed up, and my God, throw Chase Young a Heisman.
I just watched Penn State score a touchdown to get within one score of Ohio State, and all the commentators could talk about was the ocean and how deep the water was. Two's cruise goes national. Love you guys.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but Penn State had some difficulty performing well at the end of a big game.
It seems to me like Ohio State is an incumbent politician that should win in the landslide, but just can't stop making fun of the elderly.
You need to call the men in black because Chase Young may not be human.
So here's a sentence that I didn't think I would speak in 2019. I want to watch the Illinois and Iowa game.
This is Sam in NYC, fired up that New York's one true team is ending the year with a win. Fordham gets it done on senior day. You don't come to the Bronx and expect to leave with a win at Jack Coffee Field. Come on.
Just wanted to call and say I'm really proud of my Michigan Wolverines. They did a heck of a job this season bouncing back from a rough start to close the year out in style with a big win over their heated rival, the Indiana Hoosiers.
And it looks like 9 Windiana may have had a little letdown look ahead to their rival Purdue. Let's go, Blue.
Greetings from Bloomington, Indiana. My Hoosiers played hard today, but Michigan's speed and space was too fast. Next week, beat Purdue. Take back the bucket.
Ty, I'm wondering, after Indiana broke your heart, is it time to get back together with TCU? That's a team that knows how to cover a point spread.
Hey, this is Nathan. I'm at about mile 21 of the Mount Fuji Marathon in Japan. I have no idea what happened in the OU game, but I saw we won. Boomer Sooner, baby.
Oh, FIU. You won the game, but did you lose your coach?
I just got back from my first football game at Lane Stadium. Thanks, Kenny Pickett.
Chilly day in South Bend, Indiana. Great day for a crock potting.
Notre Dame may have beaten BC today, but BC still stands for better Catholic.
I am glad we beat the Aggies, but next week you put the mustard on first and the ketchup over it. Red over yellow. Dogs on top.
This is not a drill. I repeat, this is not a drill. The National Potato Service has issued a severe hot potato warning in Pullman, Washington. It is imperative that you take shelter on your couch and turn to the Pac-12 After Dark Network.
The Cougars are bowl eligible, and that's the bottom line.
Finally, after 10 years, give us the X, the X, the X, give us the X, the X, the X, give us the X, give us the X. Go Bears!
Hi, this is Ryan from Tempe, and I'd like to formally apologize to the family in front of me for the record number of expletives said during the Ayuk touchdown catch. Go Devils.
And Arizona State is back, folks.
Arizona State is back, folks. A great batch of reverbs. Thank you so much to our boy Ryan for cutting those up. He had the flu and put those together bright and early for us. So what I detected is a lot of Tom Herman fire, which we'll get to. Was it a dude running the Fuji Marathon, the Mount Fuji Marathon, or was he just watching at mile 21? I didn't detect if he was running or watching.
Unclear. I think it's better left to people's imaginations.
And also the poor child whose parents made him call the reverb line. I hope he's okay. I hope everyone's okay after watching College Football Week 13. Thank you so much for that spirited batch of reverbs. We'll dive right in here and talk about that Arizona State 31, Oregon 28 football game, Dan. Let me start by asking if you're okay. How'd you feel after watching that?
After Oregon ASU?
Yeah.
A little conflicted because there were times where I was just wearing my Oregon fan hat and obviously pretty frustrated, but also as somebody who pretty early on was driving the Jaden Daniels bandwagon, at least on this show.
Mm.
And somebody who, and I know you have like some PTSD about this, when you feel like you have a team backed up and against the wall and they throw a long, long touchdown pass or a long, long pass.
Oh, yeah.
2000, the Notre Dame SC game.
Mm.
So I can appreciate how exciting a moment is like that. I think it was to Brandon Ayuk when they had him at 3rd and 16 from their own 19 and looked to be in pretty good shape to come back and win the game. So there was some conflicting emotions going on through my head. I had never really been driving Oregon as a playoff team. They could have gotten into the playoff, but I didn't really believe them to be playoff caliber after watching, you know, the defense against Wazoo, the offense against Cal, obviously the end of the game against Auburn. I believed and still do believe that Oregon has a pretty impressive ceiling, but too inconsistent on both sides of the ball to truly feel dangerous as a playoff team. So I think if they can beat Oregon State and finish the regular season 10-2 going into the Pac-12 championship game, all things considered, I think it's a pretty successful year, but that's with the benefit of however many hours it's been since the game ended, a little bit of perspective. It's not fun in the moment, Ty. It's not particularly fun, but hats off to ASU because Jaden Daniels was a full-on dude with Frank Darby and Brandon Ayuk just torching the Oregon secondary and taking advantage of a couple of bad mistakes from Justin Herbert and a pretty beat-up Oregon offense.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to do this, but I have to do this, Dan. As we talk about...
Oh, my God, that's secondary. You're not wrong.
As we talk about the Oregon secondary, which gave up a ton of yardage through the air, 408 and 3 touchdowns to young Jaden Daniels, who, to your credit, you have driven that bandwagon all year. 535 total yards allowed by that Oregon defense. ASU controlled the clock a little more so in the early going of the game, but
yep.
You know, Benjamin got 31 carries, a monster game offensively for ASU, and it didn't help that Justin Herbert, kind of in the throes of trying to bring Oregon back through 2 fourth quarter interceptions, made the whole thing a lot harder.
Yes.
Number 6 Oregon goes down against the Arizona State Sun Devils, Dan. We talked about it a little bit in the preview show. You did mention that it was a bit worrisome. The circumstances seemed a bit worrisome, maybe for Oregon.
I'm not going to revise history. Yeah, I know. I gave the points. I'm not going to revise. Obviously, it's a tough place, and Oregon looked to be in good shape to win out after the tough stretch of their season of October and into early November, I believe. And it's just state of Arizona. The desert is and has been for quite some time, going back to, I guess, Kellen Clemens' injury in Tucson and then Dennis Dixon and then B.J. Denker taking it to the 2013 Ducks. The entire state, Sunshine, not Sunshine State, but the Valley of the Sun and Tucson, whatever, House of Horrors. It just is. It's more often than not, it's just a tough place to go in and finish out a really impressive season.
Yeah, and to your credit, and then we'll move on, I promise. You have been saying all along that Oregon's
good. You want to do 45 minutes of disappointment?
No. I mean, maybe. Kind of do, but
talk about Jake Hansen, the center, leaving and some soft snaps affecting rhythms. We can do it.
We've been talking about Oregon as a good team, but not a playoff caliber team. Even if they made it in the playoff, probably not good enough to be in that upper echelon. But
yes,
alas, that will not be happening. 31-28, your final. ASU, a huge upset of the Oregon Ducks. Before, of course, that game, the one that everyone was focused in on was Ohio State-Penn State. This was early on.
Mm-hmm.
High noon, the big noon, as it were, on the Fox network. Ohio State wins that game 28-17. I believe my prediction was Ohio State 31, Penn State 17.
Yeah, so I think I gave the points here. Yeah, I thought they were going to pull away because of Penn State's lack of offense. And I guess I wasn't really wrong about that.
No, this was an interesting game on a number of different fronts. For 2.5 quarters, honest to God, it felt like Ohio State was on the brink of just blowing the doors off Penn State.
For sure.
But then Penn State rallies. You know, in the third quarter, they make it 21-17. They were down 21-0. But Will Levis comes in, Penn State's backup. Sean Clifford got injured. And he definitely gave them a spark, some kind of spark that they needed. He did show his inexperience late in the game with a forced interception. He was trying to weave it into Pat Freiermuth. It was ugly, yes, if you watched it. But basically what happened here, Dan, from my seat, all the turnover luck went Penn State's direction. And then Will Levis comes in. He throws an interception on Penn State's final drive. And obviously, that's sort of what ended it. But three fumbles lost for Ohio State is what allowed Penn State to make this one closer.
Yeah.
Then perhaps it would appear if you watched the game the whole way through. I actually came away impressed from both teams.
Everybody played hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Penn State's ability to hang, I thought, was really impressive because they were really seriously on the verge of letting this thing get away from them. And in the third quarter, they scored 17. They made it a game. Ohio State did not cover the 19 or 20 point spread, whatever it ended up being. And I thought James Franklin did a good job earning himself his next contract extension, keeping this one close.
Oh, God, that's such a depressing thing to say, though, isn't it?
This is the state of play.
He earned that contract extension by turning some repeated fumbles into some points. Ugh.
If you don't think James Franklin is using this season to get a monster contract extension beyond 2022.
And some openings in Tallahassee and potentially LA recording this. You know, we don't know about the USC job at the moment, but yeah.
He is a Trace Armstrong client. He is leveraging all that to get a sizable pay increase. And then on the Ohio State side, I'd say I was impressed, at least early on, with their ability to separate against a good defense, a good team in Penn State.
Yeah.
They felt like the better team to me all throughout, especially along their defensive line with Chase Young, which is just insane. We knew there was kind of a mismatch there between Ohio State's front and Penn State's front, and we saw it in almost parodied fashion late in the game with Will Levis trying to lead just whatever charge late in the football game. But their line with Chase Young is nuts. The fact that he is back now is a huge deal for Ohio State.
Oh, I mean, it's enormous. Ohio State's the clear better team. Obviously, the turnovers are an issue. And I thought Penn State, for whatever they did poorly on offense, they kept Ohio State's offense in front of them for the most part. The Chris Olave touchdown catch was
amazing. A good defensive effort for Penn State.
Yes, we talked about coverage busts against both Minnesota and then Indiana these past couple weeks, especially early on. I thought Penn State, obviously Lamont Wade, had the game of his life, both in forcing fumbles and just seeming to be everywhere on the field at safety for Penn State. But I thought the Ohio State game plan was sound on offense, ride the legs of Justin Fields and obviously the legs of J.K. Dobbins. And even though things weren't necessarily there for whatever K.J. Hill and Chris Olave, Austin Mack downfield, they kept things rolling. And on Penn State's part, first of all, you know what? I had this thought in the second half when Sean Clifford got hurt. Thank God Tommy Stevens isn't awesome for Mississippi State. Thank God they probably made the right decision in going to Sean Clifford, but even he couldn't get much going. No. The offense just, they were suffocated by the pass rush. They were suffocated by everything about Ohio State's defense. Those guys were just everywhere and in the right place constantly. I thought Penn State did a decent enough job on the ground, but they couldn't even generate, like, I think KJ Hamler had one long catch, but they couldn't generate like, oh, here, this crossing route went for 27. It just, he got into the open field. Nothing was there.
No.
And there's only so much you can do if you don't have a rolling offense with a quarterback you can count on downfield to make those 50-50 throws and have receivers that can go up and make 50-50 catches. So we talked about this also beforehand. If Penn State was going to win this game, it was hitting on every cylinder, on every play, and having an out-of-the-box game plan on offense, which I just, there's only so much you can do with a first-year starting quarterback who looks fine, but taking over a game in Columbus seems out of both Will Levis and Sean Clifford's ability right now.
Yeah, for sure. And especially in the first half, Penn State had so much difficulty establishing any momentum offensively. Second half, certainly the third quarter, got a little bit better, but Ohio State's defense, I thought, did a really good job. And Penn State's defense, for their part, did a good job as well. Ohio State was just the better team. So the state of play now is Ohio State is 11-0. They win the Big Ten East. And they are due for another test next week on the road in Ann Arbor. That will be clearly a big game that we cover when we do our preview show on Tuesday.
I was going to ask how you feel now, big picture, about Ohio State now that we've seen them against a pretty significant opponent. I mean, we saw them against Wisconsin separate themselves, but this late in the year, ahead of Michigan, ahead of Big Ten championship game, ahead of, you know, presumable Big Ten championship game. No, they've locked it up. So ahead of the playoff.
Yeah.
Is there anything that has altered your perception?
No. Turnovers, you know, they have to shore that up, but it was uncharacteristic to say the least. I think they'll be
right.
Just as dominant moving forward.
If Clemson forces them to beat them deep, to take chances downfield, and that's the only way it's going to happen, you feel better, same, worse about that prospect for Ohio State? If they force them to do it for four quarters, this is how you're going to beat us. We're going to leave our corners on an island. Everything else is gone.
Right.
You feel good about that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I need more time to think about that.
Okay.
But just as it relates to getting into the playoff, I feel very confident Ohio State is going to be one of those four teams.
Same.
On the Georgia front, though.
Yes.
So right now, if you look at the playoff rankings, Georgia is number four. And Georgia's in a much different category. What's been clear all year is that they have an elite defense. They've given up more than, 17 points once all year, and that was an overtime loss to South Carolina. And they gave up 20 or something like that. So this is not a defense that's easy to score against. They won their game at home. It was in the rain. It was sloppy. 19-13 over Texas A&M. But it continues to be a question about the offense.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. At some point, you would think that the offense is going to catch up with them against better competition. It may not be until the SEC championship.
Right.
But the way things are trending now, especially in this game against an A&M team that's okay on defense.
Yeah.
To look the way they did, 260 yards, Jake Fromm had some issues throwing. Had some nice throws, but 11 of 23, no major mistakes. It's just, it's very milquetoast as it relates to offensive output here for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah.
What was your takeaway after this win?
So my look back on week 13 in the back of my brain, I was thinking about it this morning, was structural integrity Saturday, where we got a really good sense of where teams are at, how they could weather potential storms, how their foundations are built. And Georgia just sort of looks like a concrete shed that's going to survive.
Right.
There's not a lot of glamour. There's not a lot of room for anything in there beyond a desk and a folding chair. And that's the defense. The defense can weather anybody. But in terms of the actual flash and excitement of the property, there's not much there for Georgia. And that's a bummer because we thought going into this season, Jake Fromm, all this experience, DeAndre Swift, this explosive back, having the receivers that they do, even though there's not a consistently healthy number one guy, we've seen Lawrence Cager sort of come in and out of it. George Pickens had that really nice touchdown catch, but you get three chances to catch a fun Georgia offensive play. And if you miss them, if you're going to the bathroom, you might just miss the whole thing. And so when you're clunkers, and Georgia's had enough offensive clunkers, and Texas A&M, for us to not give credit to what the A&M front especially was able to do against Georgia, I think is overlooking a pretty stout performance from Mike Elko's group. Kellen Mond, was sort of asked to win this alone. And even though the first half was kind of terrible from the A&M offense, they were smart enough to go away from the run. And because nothing was absolutely there for Georgia's defense, facing Georgia's defense. So I guess I come away impressed enough in weird weather. And I don't know how often this can happen. But
what you're saying is that Georgia's one of the bunkers from Twister. Like,
yeah.
You can go down there and be safe, but you can't really see it from ground level.
I think that's right. It's I just don't want to see this Georgia team on a big stage. And that's just personal preference. That's not me being an objective person who talks about national college football stories. That's just me selfishly as a TV viewer. It's bad TV, man.
Georgia did not really have this one on ice either until...
No, this was late, man.
Last 2 minutes, DeAndre Swift gave them enough separation late. But Texas A&M made a bit of a charge 19-13. Was your final here?
They did.
So something to keep your eye on moving forward. Most likely going to be LSU against Georgia in the SEC championship game. Don't know if that's officially yet, but that's what it's going to be. And keep your eyes peeled, especially on this offense. they will have to score with LSU.
Can I think LSU clinched it against Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Elsewhere in the SEC, LSU did win by 36 over Arkansas. Joe Burrow, three more touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. 188 on just six carries. Had three touchdowns. Not a bad ratio, Dan. Three touchdowns on six carries.
No, and 188 yards, you said?
188.
On six carries?
Yep.
That's efficiency, Ty. I know, you know, call me crazy. That's my take. Yeah, Joe Burrow was very good. Slow start for LSU. I think it was 7-6 shortly into the second quarter, maybe. But I don't think anybody was particularly worried, and LSU took care of business. Good for them.
We had Alabama winning 66-3 over Western Carolina in their tune-up before the Iron Bowl. Mac Jones looks good enough. I don't know what you expected there, but 10-12, 275, three touchdowns. Bama wins pretty easily. And then on the flip side of the Iron Bowl matchup next week, we had Auburn 52-0 over Samford. Elsewhere in the SEC, we had Kentucky big over UT Martin. Vandy with the shutout of Eastern Tennessee State. Mississippi State wins 45-7 over Abilene Christian. And Tennessee 24-20 over Mizzou. A monster game. 415 yards and two touchdowns for one Jared Garantano, Dan.
Jared Garantano. Yeah, Mizzou has been a nightmare on offense, and now defensively, which has been a strength. Their secondary is beat up. Tennessee takes advantage. A really nice bounce back. We talked about the Tennessons a few weeks ago, and the Vols have actually come through and should finish out the season. I think they have a pretty good shot. They have Vandy to finish out the season. I would, you know, call me crazy. I think 7-5 Tennessee with a really strong case that 9-3 was right there.
Yeah.
The Tennessee not very impressive, especially with the depths, I would say, Jarrett Garantano dropped to during the year for him to bounce back in the way they did. They ran well. Juwan Jennings, obviously, is a full-on dude. So, really nice. Tennessee go on the road and beat a team in Mizzou who finished with Arkansas, Barry Odom. There is just a lot
of... Are they looking for a new coach after this year?
I don't think they are looking. I don't think they want to. I think there might be a situation where they are backed into a wall.
Yeah.
This was the year. This was the year.
It was supposed to be. They went out. They got Kelly Bryant. There was a lot
defense
on their side.
A ton. Schedule looked amazing.
No,
I don't think they want to, but woof.
Didn't work. Okay, before we go and talk about the ACC, we need to talk about our friends over at Roback, Dan.
I'd love to.
They just launched a performance quilted vest, and they are going like hotcakes, Dan. Blue, black, and gray. They've got a puffy vest built for this kind of weather. They fit perfectly. They're perfect for your commute, wearing out to happy hour, even for a round of golf if you're into it. They are next level. I've seen these things. They will change your life for the better, especially in this colder weather. That is on top of what they're already doing in the Q-Zip space, which we've talked ad nauseum
the
about.
The Q-Zip space. We're launching a new podcast called the Q-Zip space, where it's just exhaustive reviews of what you should be wearing in 52 degrees.
Our logo is Marty Smith, right?
Oh, yeah. We can't afford
some
imagery.
Sweet new designs in the Q-Zip space, new colors, an all-new houndstooth quarter zip. If you're an Alabama fan, maybe jump on that. Definitely worth going to roback.com to check out what they're doing in that space. They've also got performance polos, Dan. Everything over at Roback is about performance. We've talked about these guys before, but they're hands down the best performance polos in the game. This is the real deal here. So I know we're getting a gift season, but if you're looking for high quality gifts, you can't fake the quality, the detail, and all just the tender loving care that these guys put into creating the perfect performance gear, whether it's the polo, the Q-Zip, or now with the new puffy vest. Solid 20 is your offer code. Solid 20 gets you 20% off your first purchase, but you got to do it before the end of the week.
Okay.
All right. Take a minute. Let that sink in. Do it before the end of the week. Perfect for any gift of any occasion. Roback rolled out all the cool new stuff. Roback.com, R-H-O-B-A-C-K. The code is solid20, R-H-O-B-A-C-K. Solid 20% off your first order. When it comes down to it, Dan, Roback is your dual threat activewear. Best fit and best feel.
Ty, can we go back to the, can we row back to the games?
Yes, please.
Okay. You want to go to the ACC?
I do.
It's very rare. And I say this as somebody who is enthusiastically wrong about everything. It's very rare that we pick a game, and it's not rare that we disagree on the outcome of the game, but it's rare that one of us picks a game and say, okay, Team A, I'm liking Team A here. And what you're saying about Team B doesn't matter all that much to me. So I'm rolling with Team A. And then Team A gets shut out. Team A just full on gets shut out. We disagreed on the Pitt Virginia Tech game. Again, both of us could not be more wrong about most of what we say. But for Bud Foster, in his final game at Lane Stadium, to lead a defense to a shutout performance against a Pitt team in it for the Coastal could not have been more impressive for this Virginia Tech team finishing out their ACC schedule pre-Virginia.
Yeah.
With a shutout win over a pretty good team, finding their quarterback who himself was good, he himself, and just a thorough ass whooping.
This,
cool to see, Ty.
This was a vintage Bud Foster lunch pail defense. Sort of like when they remastered the Star Wars trilogy and then they re-released it. I felt like I was watching a scene out of Bud Foster's past here, watching this defense. Pitt only mustered 177 yards in total, 117 of which came through the air, so not a lot on the ground. No. They were 3 of 15 on third downs, 0 for 3 on fourth downs, 10 penalties, and obviously 0 points, as you said at the top here. And yeah, nice game for Hendon Hooker. The run game is sort of a mess, but that's kind of been the deal all year for the Hokies. What matters most for them now, they've won 6 of 7. They're headed into that rivalry next week against Virginia. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of success in that game. A good job here by Justin Fuente to pull it back together after a rough start. And now get to a point where they're knocking on the door of 9 wins.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Really nice turnaround for the Hokes.
All right, moving on. FIU 30? Miami 24?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of extremes thrown around. This is the darkest day in Miami Hurricane history.
I mean, it could be.
It might be. Oh, no, it might be. For sure, it might be.
FIU is coached by Butch Davis. Remember him?
For sure.
He had some success in his time at Miami.
Fair to say.
They played this one at the Orange Bowl.
Yeah. So, I mean, FIU is down in the Miami area.
Sure, so sure. They played it at the Orange Bowl, so something of a homecoming for both teams.
Yeah.
But FIU is a 20-point dog. And when I say that they won by 6, 30-24, you might be thinking like, oh, it was a last second touchdown, or it was close, or back and forth, and they won it at the end. They kicked the tar out of Miami here, Dan. They were up 20 early in the fourth quarter. It was a horrible offensive showing for the Canes. 3 turnovers, 1 for 10 on third downs. Their drive chart was a car crash until the fourth quarter. Like, it would be one thing if this were a sneaky good Group of Five school, but they're not. They stink. They're going to make a bowl by beating 4 of the worst teams in college football.
Correct.
New Hampshire and now Miami.
I mean, they beat Charlotte, who's bowl eligible. Charlotte's a good story. That's FIU's best win. Okay.
No, their best win's Miami, but before this, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously before Miami. It was a disaster. Offensively, Miami was turnover prone. They couldn't get anything going. They made far too many mistakes. And FIU hung around. They were happy to clean up all of Miami's mistakes. And nobody was, I mean, Anthony Jones, I guess, was fine for FIU on the ground. But
no.
This was much more of a story of just utter and complete slop from the Hurricanes.
Miami now 0-3 coming out of bye weeks. Just FYI. Not great.
And like terrible, terrible performances, especially in those first quarters of those games.
All right. Elsewhere in the ACC, I'll go through these quickly. Notre Dame wins 40-7 over Boston College. Took them a little bit of time to get moving, but in the end, 501 yards of offense, and they held a decent BC offense down to just 191 yards. So looking like 10-2 for Notre Dame, provided the Stanford thing doesn't go haywire next weekend. All things considered, I think a pretty good season for the Irish.
And they've won, what, 14 of 15 of their last ACC games?
Yes.
I saw that somewhere. I think Pete Sampson tweeted that out.
Wake Forest wins by 12 over Duke. They had a big game on the ground. Also, congratulations to their kicker, Nick Skiba? Skiba? I don't know how you say it, but he's a sophomore.
Yeah.
And he set an NCAA record with 32 consecutive field goals made, which is pretty cool for him. Wake Forest is on track for 9 wins, which is a nice campaign.
Yeah, and again, Wake is without their best offensive player in Sage Surratt for the season. So to be able to put 40 and 600-plus yards and run like they did, really impressive for Wake against a Duke team that, I guess, showed some fight, but this is just a down Blue Devil squad.
Louisville wins 56-34 over Syracuse. Nobody played any defense in this game, Dan. There were over 1,100 total yards, obviously 90 total points. McHale! Cunningham with 5 touchdown passes. He had another one on the ground. Louisville is 7-4, probably a dog next week at Kentucky. But at this point in the season, to have a shot at 8 wins, probably one of those stories that won't get enough love, but it's a hell of a job in year one for Scott Satterfield.
Well, they didn't make the playoff tie. So yeah. Why are we wasting our time on a good story?
Good
like
story,
Louisville?
Though. Really good story.
Yeah. Really nice story after bottoming out under Bobby Petrino and taking advantage of a definitely down ACC. But that's what pretty good teams should do. And I like the offense and I like where it's going. They need some work on the other side of the ball.
To close out the ACC, we had Georgia Tech with a 2-point win over NC State.
That's great, Ty. They ran all over NC State, who, by the way, it might have been a Dave Doran gambit to get a new job after last year when it didn't work out. Like awkwardly, like, oh, so.
Yeah.
And now NC State is terrible.
All right. Over in the Big Ten, Indiana was my lock of the week. And to the Michigan fans who reminded me of that yesterday on social media, I do thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you very much.
It was his birthday, and that's how you treated him.
For the first 2.5 quarters, this game was close enough. And certainly early on, it seemed like it was going to be competitive, but Michigan pulled away late. They end up winning comfortably by a 39-14 score. Here's what's encouraging. First off, the way the Michigan defense rallied after giving up 2 first half touchdowns was impressive. Nothing, virtually nothing from there on out. Secondly, and maybe most importantly, Shea Patterson is playing with confidence right now.
He looks great.
366 yards, 5 touchdowns in this one. He's now got 12 touchdowns to just 1 interception in his last 3 games. Also, some longer pass plays in this game, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Longer pass plays, which is encouraging to see. Dare I say the offense has clicked? Dare I say it's clicked at precisely the right time now with Ohio State coming to town next week? Michigan's going to be loaded for bear here, Dan. All of, I'm assuming, the pregame shows are going to be in Ann Arbor. Not that there's ever any lack of energy for the game when Ohio State is on the menu, but this is a big deal now. This is certainly a big deal. Ohio State's got a lot to play for, and Michigan's in a spot where they've got 2 losses, and they see themselves, Dan, as having a legitimate shot to play spoiler here.
They have a legitimate shot to play spoiler. I came away crazy impressed with this Michigan offense, not just the execution, but the actual structure. If we're talking about it as structural integrity Saturday, the architecture, the way that this Michigan house has been built, going downfield, finding Nico Collins in rhythm in, you know, Indiana zones. You know, the Giles Jackson, it was like a play-action wheel route that he runs going way downfield for 40 or 50 yards. The great passes into the end zone, in the red zone, to the corner of the end zone, timing routes to Donovan Peoples-Jones going up and catching big balls. Big balls. I like that they weren't trying to hammer the run when it wasn't there as Indiana was loaded for bear up front. Michigan's a good team. This offense has come together. It's improved. Shea Patterson continues to play at a very high level. I'm impressed with his confidence. I'm impressed with the rhythm with which he plays. It's at Indiana. It's a soggy weather game, and certainly Indiana was beat up on offense. Obviously, Stevie Scott in and out. They're without a top receiver, and an offensive lineman or two goes down. Michigan had the depth to weather this game, and it fully showed over the course of, 3-4 quarters. So
yeah,
I don't know how much better I feel about Michigan against Ohio State, but at the absolute very least, Michigan is going to be very annoying for Ohio State.
They're going to be annoying, and I would say, I don't know how I feel either, but I feel better now than I did at any other point this season.
Yes. I feel especially good about Josh Gattis right now with Michigan.
The way
that the players are playing with a certain degree of confidence in the passing game. Again, it's Indiana. They have not played great, great teams since Wisconsin, right? I mean, the Notre Dame win, notwithstanding, was a very good win.
Hey, Indiana's a bowl team. Indiana's
good.
Indiana's legitimately good. So this is not something to be taken lightly. They're playing with confidence on offense. They're getting bigger plays. Could have run the ball better yesterday, but whatever.
Nico Collins is a dude. He's a full-on dude.
Yeah. No, great win for Michigan now as they head into Ohio State week. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere in the Big Ten, remember how we talked about the weird opening point spread in the Minnesota-Northwestern game?
Yeah.
Opened up at 7. Very quickly, the line jumped up to 13.5 when we recorded on Wednesday. Well, Dan, lo and behold, it went all the way up to 16.5 at kickoff. And they're so good at this.
Yeah.
Whatever black magic they're using to figure this out, I hope y'all got in early because Minnesota.
We were in on it early.
We were. I was wrong. But Minnesota won by exactly 16, 38-22, thanks to a nice little stanky pulsating backdoor cover by the Northwestern Wildcats. Nice game for Tanner Morgan. 4 touchdowns for him, 1 for Tyler Johnson, 3 for perennial dude now, Rashad Bateman.
Oh, my God.
Minnesota got their own big in next week against Wisconsin, which will decide the Big Ten West.
Axe. I don't know how much, Northwestern's down to their 4th string quarterback, I want to say, when Hunter Johnson went out early. And they just tried to turn him into a belldozer type. And it was fine at times. He ran pretty well. But Minnesota, there's just too much firepower. Crazy impressed with Minnesota's year.
And Wisconsin, they beat Purdue by 21. It was competitive for a half, but then they pulled away. Another 200-yard rushing effort for Jonathan Taylor, tailback. This time, 222 yards. It was his 12th career 200-yard game. Elsewhere.
Sloppiness, by the way, from Wisconsin.
A little bit of sloppiness.
They lose 3 fumbles. Jack Cohn throws a pick. The receivers are really good for Wisconsin. At least they're better than I thought they would be. I can only speak for myself. But when you have Jonathan Taylor just pacing everything, you should not be losing to a Purdue team this beat up.
Elsewhere, we had Michigan State blanking Rutgers to get to bowl eligibility.
Hey.
We had Nebraska winning big over Maryland. Force 4 turnovers. Decent game for Adrian Martinez. They need a win next week against Iowa to get bowl eligible. And Iowa, for their part, they were favored by 15.5 at kickoff over Illinois. But this was actually a competitive game, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, 3 turnovers from Illinois are what made the difference. You highlighted this on one of our previous shows, but despite being very irresponsible with the football this season, Illinois has somehow managed to get to 6 wins. In this one, it did come back to bite them as they lose 19-10 to the Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add about Nebraska-Maryland. They need to beat Iowa to tie these two games together to get bowl eligible. I spent an inordinate amount of time trying to come up with a Nebraska drive to 6. The best I could come up with, Frazda Miata, and I'm not proud of it to honor Scott Frost's efforts. No, just terrible. And a lot easier to beat Illinois when you take out their quarterback on a clear targeting non-targeting. It's a lot easier to do that when Brandon Peters is having a pretty decent game and you just destroy him across his. It wasn't even head-to-head. It was head-to-face.
Yeah.
And no call. And Iowa, the better team, but that makes it easier.
Over in the Big 12, some things we need to discuss here.
Okay.
Oklahoma won 28-24 over TCU. They led 21-0 early in the second quarter, but then they let TCU back in it. Now, I'm not going to say I felt ever like Oklahoma was losing control, but this was not their best effort here. And again, I hearken back to this. I'll probably be beating this drum till I'm blue in the face, but another top 40-ish team that they can't separate from. They had the separation early. They did not put this game on ice.
No.
3 turnovers for the offense. Jalen Hurts, 11 for 21 passing with 2 touchdowns, but threw a pick 6, which kept it closer. Fumbled in the red zone. I guess the bright spot for the Sooners is that TCU couldn't really get much going offensively, certainly not through the air. But
no.
Again, I come back to this point. It's definitely notable as we look at the Bedlam game next week. Oklahoma has had difficulty putting the game on ice against some of the better teams on their schedule.
Yeah, Oklahoma's a good team. They're not a great team. They can't beat you in a number of ways. I saw their tight end, Grant Calcaterra, retired because of repeated concussions, I believe.
Nah, that sucks, yeah.
Yeah, so that obviously is a weapon, although they stepped up at tight end at times without him. And CeeDee Lamb was not a huge factor in this game. And for TCU, the architecture of their offense is deeply flawed. I think Max Duggan will be pretty good. He made some questionable passes. Obviously, Oklahoma seals it with an interception at the end of a game. And, I mean, you're right. Oklahoma's ability to go up and stay up. I mean, it felt like a reverse of last week, I suppose, the Baylor game.
Yeah.
But Jalen Hurts remains the cause of and solution to all of Oklahoma's offensive problems. And they're going to lose something ugly moving forward. Not necessarily being blown out, but lose in an ugly fashion. And I just, it's okay to be good. It's okay if you're down year, you're at least 10-1. It's okay.
Oh, yeah. So no, that's fine.
I'm not terribly worried about Oklahoma, but for them to give away that start is not perfect. And did we both take the points in this game? I don't even remember, but
I took the points.
Yeah, yeah, I did too. Oklahoma has some flaws. That's all.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Baylor wins 24-10 over Texas. So
well,
the point
of,
the point that we'll mention here about Baylor, and it kind of piggybacks on a number of the calls that we got on the Reverb line, but congrats, they're going to the Big 12 title game for the first time. This was a nice bounce-back win against a big in-state opponent. A lot of this is gravy. It was close until, I guess, late the third quarter. That's when Baylor broke it open, a big game for Denzel Mims, and a lot to love on the Baylor side. They keep the train rolling. They're going to finish 11-1 in the regular season, which is like an unbelievable, amazing turnaround story for Matt Rhule.
Yeah.
Okay? We assume all that
was there, by the way.
What's
right
that?
There. 12-0 was there.
It was there. No, it was there.
Yeah.
But we assume that much is fact, yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let's talk about Texas, Dan.
I was going to say I would love to, but I will tolerate some Texas discussion.
They couldn't get much going on offense. They were 4 of 13 on third downs. They had too many penalties. 391 yards, interestingly enough, for both teams in total offense. But Texas is 6-5 now.
I think they're 4-4 in conference, 6-5. Yep.
They've had a lot of injuries to deal with, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They've had trouble with their secondary. And, you know, Sam Ehlinger remains one of the better quarterbacks in college football, but the risk is always a game like this. When you play against a better defense, they contain your offense, they stop you from getting any real momentum. And you end up putting up 10 points on the board, Dan. I visit a bunch of different websites around this time of year to see who's on the coaching hot seat.
Brag much?
Now, I don't know if Tom Herman's on the actual hot seat, but I feel like you could construct an argument relatively easily that he should be. Where do you stand on Texas and where they're at right now?
Texas is not that good. Texas needed to call a timeout at the end of this game to run it in to score a touchdown against Baylor, a very good Baylor team. A Baylor team that should be allowing at least 1 to 2 touchdowns a game against a team as talented as Texas. That is not a fiery take. That is just the reality of the what should be the reality of Earth. Sam Ehlinger, I am not a big fan of criticizing specific players. He is sometimes good. And sometimes he is not that good. Sometimes he misses receivers who
the,
are open.
The highs of Sam Ehlinger are among some of the highest.
Sure.
Of all quarterbacks in college football.
But
there are those low moments.
I don't like the design of this offense all that much. I don't like especially the passing design of this offense all that much. It just, I think there's too much application of what worked at Houston for Tom Herman. They're the comfortable hires on both sides of the ball. I know he didn't know Todd Orlando, but there's just, it feels like things are just too comfortable at Texas, that there's no real urgency to what Texas does, especially on offense. And it's not like the Baylor offense just destroyed and gashed Texas. I mean, Charlie Brewer was fine.
Yeah.
They ran. I mean, Denzel Mims is going to get his against damn near everybody. So there's no shame in allowing that to him. But to show that little situational fight in big moments, whether it's third downs, whether it's red zone visits, whatever, and to have the I think Texas had over 100 yards in penalty yardage.
Yeah, too many penalties. Just,
they're not prepared to win.
Here, and this is my point, right? My point is that there are plenty of excuses that you could use as to why Texas has not had a great season. Chief among those,
played Baylor tougher than Texas.
Chief among those being some of the injuries that they've had to deal with.
For sure.
But
America's only injured team.
The product on the field, at least the one that was on display against Baylor, was very unappealing. And I know they went out. I know Tom Herman was highly coveted, not just by Texas, but by pretty much any school that had an opening.
Yeah, South Carolina, LSU, sure.
But this was not a good season for the Longhorns. It's not over yet, but this has not been a good season for them. And I'm not suggesting that I want to see him on the hot seat, but I would not surprise me if that argument is something that we start seeing a little bit more of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have their 2020 schedule in front of me, and this might be a March 2's cruise or whatever we're going to call our offseason weird shows, themed shows. Texas shouldn't lose more than 3 games in a season.
No.
Not against a Big 12 that appears to be so open that a Baylor team that has really come around strong has been the team to fully take advantage of. New coaches at Tech and West Virginia and Kansas State and Kansas. You just figured it would be a team like Texas or Texas itself being that team with the stability, with the experienced quarterback, with the experienced guys, you know, in the backfield and out wide and up front. Texas is 6-5. To me, it feels like, yes, injuries affected things. It feels like a coaching failure.
All right, real quick. Three other games in the Big 12. Oklahoma State won by 7 over West Virginia. Mm-hmm. We had Iowa State winning by 10 in a bit of a shootout over Kansas, and Kansas State winning by 3 over Texas Tech.
So Drew Brown and Jarrett Dagey get the starts for Oklahoma State and West Virginia, respectively. Jarrett Dagey coming in a preserving redshirt 4-game situation. And Oklahoma State, obviously, with Drew Brown in there, they weren't as aggressive as they normally are in offense, but they did enough to get the job done. Kansas actually did a pretty decent job taking it to a pretty good Iowa State defense, but the prospect of Brock Purdy with the ball in his hands was just too daunting for the Jayhawks and good for Iowa State. Can finish the year 8-4 with a win over Kansas State. And as for the Cats, nice tight win over Texas Tech. They needed, I think it was a 100-yard kick return to get there, but good teams get those. So Chris Klieman, I think, has done a pretty phenomenal job in year one with Kansas State.
All right, let me start the Pac-12 off with 3 games that I don't think we have a whole lot to talk about. Utah wins by 28 over Arizona, 35-7.
Class of the conference, yeah.
Class of the conference. Utah has a Colorado team next week. We'll get to Colorado in a little bit.
Yep.
But if they knock off Colorado, they get to 11-1. Great year. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Unbelievable. So unbelievably, yeah.
We had USC 52-35 over UCLA. This was notable First off, I guess because it was close for about a half.
I think they got it. UCLA got it within 10 at a couple different points, but yeah.
Yeah. Secondly, because Keaton Slovis broke a school record throwing for 515, four touchdowns and no interceptions. He's the real deal.
For sure.
And thirdly, now because USC's season is over. Literally, it is over. They're 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely some encouraging signs down the stretch.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, 8-4 with Clay Helton hanging in the balance. And, you know, there are other openings around college football, most notably Florida State. There will probably be others that pop up. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting to see which direction USC heads, because my sense from reading, again, websites, Dan.
Oh, my God. Ty, the bragging.
Is that some coaches will probably wait and see if that USC opening is a thing or not before deciding if they want to go elsewhere. So nice win for USC. I think good close to their season, but 8-4 was the final tally.
By the way, I believe if Colorado beats Utah, USC is in the Pac-12 championship game.
Correct. Correct.
So maybe the Pac-12
season, regular season for USC. Is complete.
The regular season is complete. You mentioned Keaton Slovis. Obviously, they're healthier in their backfield. They're healthier on defense. They didn't get a ton of stops against UCLA, who actually has come along offensively pretty impressively. I mean, Dorian Thompson-Robinson threw the ball well. He threw some complete garbage passes, but I think his improvement has been nice to see. And really, USC, I think they had four receivers over 100 yards.
Yeah.
They had Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, Michael Pittman, and I believe he's a freshman, Drake London, just all over the place. So just UCLA just could not survive the four, the four Trojans of the apocalypse, whatever it is. USC finished the season strong. Still, even when they win, too undisciplined at times. But how do you complain about beating UCLA in the Coliseum and dropping 50 on them?
Cal knocked off Stanford by a 24-20 score. Don't have
late
much
comeback
to add there. Yeah, late comeback.
Here's all I have to add. Garbers played. Chase Garbers was really good. Led the comeback. Stanford tried to win it, but couldn't quite get there in the fourth. And if Cal had Chase Garbers all year long, again, if my grandma had balls, et cetera, et cetera. If I had wheels, I'd be a bicycle. But Cal's probably beating ASU. Cal's probably beating Oregon. Cal's probably beating Oregon State. And we're talking about a 9-2 Cal team heading into their final game against UCLA. So if you want to buy stock in a team who just had some bad breaks in 2019, Cal wouldn't be the worst place to start.
The final two games here to discuss in the Pac-12. Let's go to Wazoo 54, Oregon State 53. 110 passing attempts in this game, Dan. 11 passing touchdowns in this game. Anthony Gordon goes 50 of 70 passing.
I think set a Pac-12 touchdowns in a single season record?
Yes, 606 yards and 6 touchdowns in a winning effort, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake Luton with a more meager 22 of 40 for 408 and 5 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
If you like offense, this was the game for you. Wazoo trailed really late in this game. They needed a 10-play, 58-yard drive to score the go-ahead touchdown. A heartbreaker for Oregon State, who remains very plucky.
They do. They need to win the Civil War to get to a bowl. This probably would have been the easier game.
Probably would have been the easier, but nonetheless, the fact that they're playing for six,
yeah,
that they're still driving for six, is very notable.
Oh, yeah.
And Wazoo, for their part, they do get bowl eligible with this win. So we'll talk more about the Civil War when we do the Tuesday preview show.
It's almost impossible to closely win a game when you outgain the opponent by 200 yards, but also it's almost impossible to win a game when you lose the turnover battle 5-1.
Tough. Tough.
48 total points in the fourth quarter. This was, I did not stay up because I was exhausted. I watched it this morning. It was raucous, Ty. It was raucous. A backflip penalty at the end. It's good times.
And finally, Colorado 20, Washington 14.
Mm-hmm.
We've been saying it all year that nobody puts Stevie Montez in a corner,
mm-hmm,
especially not in his final home game.
Right.
And a big win for Colorado here. Not going to lie.
Huge.
Even though Washington is 6-5 now and clearly not their optimal version.
Fair.
This is a big win for Colorado in Mel Tucker's first year.
Yeah.
Jacob Eason was under pressure the whole game. Colorado sacked him 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Washington couldn't get any momentum offensively. And, you know, 6-5 for Washington. Not a great year. They got the Apple Cup on deck. We'll see what happens there. But this is one of those cases where I'm going to say I was right.
About what part of it?
About Washington being maybe like a 7-5 team.
Yeah, it's been a disappointing year, and it's been avoidably, I would say, disappointing. Obviously, they couldn't get anything going on the ground against Colorado, and it was just a matter of the Buffs building the whole plane out of pressure. And the rap on Jacob Eason was he doesn't handle pressure all that well, and Mel Tucker just sent it after Jacob Eason, and he struggled for most of this game. Laviska Shenault found himself open and had himself a game, and I don't think Colorado is going to get to a bowl game because they finished with Utah, I believe, in Salt Lake City on the road. But for Washington to lose a game like this, I don't think they scored a first half point. It's just the season's lost. Yeah, whatever happened after Jonathan Smith left, and the whatever, if it's a coaching hire thing on offense, if a coordinator thing, but Washington both needing to come back against Colorado, Washington looking like they did against Oregon State. It's just, it doesn't, we're not going into the offseason, no matter what happens in the Apple Cup, because they haven't lost to Wazoo under Chris Peterson. No matter what happens, it's going to be a very long Husky offseason. Yeah.
Agreed. All right. That's all I got, Dan. Any quick tidbits that I missed and any dudes that you'd like to share?
Well, first of all, you missed a ton, Ty, because we only did Power 5 conferences, and a lot happened. SMU-Navy was a hell of a game.
Really good
Malcolm
game.
Malcolm Perry, full-on dude. Otherwise, Cincinnati won in very ugly fashion, but they managed to clinch their American division. They take on Memphis, and there's a chance, depending on what happens in that game, that they will have a rematch, but Navy is also still in it to make the American title game. Also fun that Navy could play in their conference title game 2 weeks before playing Army. Always fun there. We did SoCon Saturday in the SEC, across, I think Charlotte got bowl eligible for the first time in a good amount of time. So Will Healy and the 49ers, you know, beating Marshall is not insignificant. UAB with a nice win over Louisiana Tech. Rice, they were winless, and now they just beat a recent bowl team in North Texas.
Two in a row
for the Mean Green. Two in a row. Great. Cool. Good for you. San Jose State, I was hoping they were going to get to a bowl, but they go down to UNLV and lose their bowl hopes there. I did see it was Hawaii. San Diego State was quite close. 14-11. I know you like a good rare score.
Yeah.
14-11 is a rare score as Hawaii wins a crucial Mountain West game. Fresno State not going to a bowl because Nevada, as bad as Nevada has been, and I tweeted this out from the Solid Verbal account, that they just got shelled by like three different teams. They could still go 8-4, and they have a win over a good Mountain West team. So that was good for them. Otherwise, Houston with a nice win, but they're not going to a bowl. They beat on Tulsa. FAU quietly 8-3. They beat up on UTSA, who's not that good, but an improved UTSA team. Louisiana gets their 9th win over a Troy team, starting over in a number of ways, but the Trojans could still go to a bowl game. Lehigh got real close, Ty.
17-16, they lost, yeah.
Lafayette gets probably their best offensive player kicked out of the game for having two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties called against him. They kick a field goal, though, 17-16 in the 155th version, iteration.
I got caught in the traffic after this game. That wasn't fun.
Your classic Goodman Stadium gridlock.
Yeah. All right. Who are our dudes?
I have some dudes for you. Whoa, whoa, whoa,
who we got?
Keaton Slovis and those USC receivers. Lamont Wade for Penn State. Undeniable. Denzel Mims continues. Malcolm Perry for Navy. Jaden Daniels for ASU. How do you deny that? Nico Collins was terrific for Michigan. All of Virginia Tech's defense. Zach Moss for Utah. Logan Wilson at Wyoming, the linebacker with a game-sealing interception against Colorado State. Chase Young, unblockable for Ohio State. He's retired, but let's mention him anyway. Iowa kicker Keith Duncan, and those are your dudes.
Alrighty, so here is the deal, boys and girls.
Yes.
Because of the weird schedule this week, and we've got some games that are played early, we've got others that are played on Saturday. Because of all that, we record early. So as opposed to a twos cruise, we'll still have a nautically themed show, but you're going to have to listen for that on Monday evening. And our normal weekly preview show, which drops on a Thursday morning, is going to come out on Tuesday evening. Our hope is that you'll have enough time to listen.
Everybody's traveling for sure.
You're in the plane, you're in the car. on the train, wherever you may be, on your way to grandma's house, listen to the Solid Verbal. We're going to make sure we get this podcast out nice and early so you have all that information at the ready. So we had a question come in about like, what do I need to know about Team X from a high level if they come up at the Thanksgiving table? We're going to give you all that knowledge that you need.
Ty, we're so thoughtful. That's all I have.
All right. Well, for that guy over there over in beautiful, sunny Southern California, not protesting on the field at Harvard Yale, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt here across the country in Eastern Pennsylvania, we will catch you all tomorrow. Stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.